I'm all about stuff that's like not too stock. I don't want a drill to be involved in my bike process. I'm not there yet.
You are listening to Service Course by the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. The stories behind the bikes.
I'm just into riding up hills and kind of the story around that. Like, to me, it's just the best part of riding a bike is uphill, and I feel like everyone else will figure that out, and or I'm crazy.
You know, if you can kind of have that balance between weight and aerodynamics, or the kind of demand of the hill, then you're going to be winning at that point with the bike.
With Tom Worley and Lizzie Banks.
I've been trying to think of a unique and original way to start Service Course, but all I can think of is what the cycling podcast do and say, where are we, Lizzie? And it's important to say, for this episode, we are indoors because it's bloody freezing.
It is freezing. We're indoors in the Rose Cottage Tea Rooms in Castleton. We are at the foot of Winnett's Pass, which is one of the most famous and savage climbs in the country, which is apt to introduce our podcast on hill climbing this month. So Winnett's Pass was actually used 6 times for the national hill climb between 47 and 79, I think, and hasn't been used since. And we were just postulating why, because it's a really horrible climb and it's a pretty iconic climb too.
Yeah, absolutely. It always crops up. It's in the 100 best climbs books. It always crops up on climbs you should do in this country and those sort of articles. And it is, I mean, for an event, it's perfect because it's so steep. So the riders go past really slowly. But either side, there's like cliffs. The vantage point you get over any race that goes up there is incredible, right? And the atmosphere, the sound echoing around from the cliffs would be incredible.
Yeah, it's just... it's a brilliant place to ride. Any time I do ride up there, which is very, very rare because I usually avoid it. You know, I always think, wow, it's really pretty stunning. But there used to be a main road that went round to the side up Mam Tor, and it collapsed repeatedly and they rebuilt it repeatedly. And then they finally realised that it's not going to work and it's just going to keep collapsing. And so I wonder that it became too much of a kind of a main route through the Peak District that they weren't able to close it, which is such a shame because it's such an iconic scene for a bike race.
And I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure the Milk Racers visited it. There used to be a race called the Tour of the Peaks, which would have been up there. I mean, if any race organisers out there need a really iconic stage finish, please come and use Winnett's Pass. Lizzie, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, come and use it, but please don't put it in the Women's Tour of Britain.
I think you'd go quite well up there, I reckon. From a breakaway, definitely.
Yeah, maybe if a breakaway had 10 minutes up the road.
But we are in Derbyshire. Like, you know, it's hard to avoid hill climbs around here. It is Derbyshire and Yorkshire, probably in this country, the spiritual home of hill climbing as a sport.
For sure. We have so many steep climbs on our doorstep and so many climbs that have been used for the British National Hill Climb Championship. Just a stone's throw away from here, you've got Rowsley Bar, Long Hill, Winnett's Pass, Peroid Lane, Jackson Bridge, Holmoss, Scammonden Dam, you know, so many, Derbyshire and Yorkshire, I would say.
And it's close to your heart. It's your baby, isn't it, hill climbing? Because it is what was your way into the sport and to realising you've got potential.
Yeah, hill climbing's definitely my baby. I started with the University Hill Climb Championships and I'd only bought a bike a few weeks before. I rocked up, raced up Kerber Edge, just down the road from here, came fifth. And thought, oh, yeah, maybe I'm onto something here. Next year, I came back to the hill climbs, raced all the local hill climbs, and I had this incredible community support, people really pushing you on, and just, yeah, driving you to keep going. And I did really well in those, and that was kind of what made me believe maybe I've got something here, maybe if I work hard at this, I can be a professional one day.
Well, talking of doing hill climbs, despite the fact that it is your off-season and you deserved a rest, before you went on holiday and did put your feet up, we sent you to do a local hill climb just round the corner from here, next to Winnett's Pass, the Mamnick Hill Climb. So shall we hear how that went?
Yeah, they really set me up there.
So it's a chilly October morning, still single figures. I've just ridden out from home in Sheffield to Edale Village Hall car park. I've got Kinder Scout on one side with clouds rolling across the top, and I've got Mam Tor on the other. And to be honest, I'm wondering, what the hell am I doing here? It's the penultimate weekend of the year before my off-season starts, and for some reason I thought it would be a good idea and it would be fun to enter my local hill climb. But now, standing here at the bottom of the hill with 2 kilometres, an average gradient of 10%, I'm really wondering what on earth I was thinking. I'm in the car park surrounded by predominantly skinny blokes and all their skinny 5 kilo bikes. And I'm really wondering if this was a good idea. But let's give it a go and see what happens.
Hiya, I'm Andrew Feather. I've come up from down south to see the race today. So I'm riding on a Canada Super 6 Evo High Mod, 2019 version. And in terms of setup gears, I've got a single chain ring and running 44, which is good. I think it gives you a good variation on a wide range of climbs. Today, I had a bit of a technical issue because my gears were making a really strange noise, and I realised then that I didn't have the back wheel in the groove, so that was a bit of an error, really. But
best to make these mistakes before the National Hill Climb.
Exactly, yeah.
Andy failed to mention that he's actually the current reigning National Hill Climb champion as well.
Yeah, I won the national championship last year in Peel Road Lane in Sheffield, and this year it's going to be a completely different climb. It's down in Devon, which is a long climb, over 12 minutes. So this year I've predominantly been focusing on the longer climbs, basically, rather than last year. It was more the 2-3 minute climbs, basically. So I've done lots of long climbs. Great Dunfell in the north. I'm doing a tumble tomorrow in Wales, all over sort of 10 minutes, really. So just a completely different effort, I suppose. So a couple more weeks of preparation and then see how it goes. It's anyone's game. I think whoever wins is going to be a worthy winner. It's a hard climb, quite hard to get a good pace, to pace it well, really. So lots of changes in gradients. So yeah, it'll be quite a technical one, I think.
A couple of interesting things about your setup. So you've got these CycleWorks EE brakes.
Yeah, I've got those. Yeah, they're sort of extremely light. I took the ETAP ones off, and I think they come out roughly. They take off 100 grams, basically. They're really, really decent.
Couple of things I noticed as well. You haven't cut your brake pads in half, and you haven't sewn your handlebars off. Now, do you think there's... And another thing as well, you've got a traditional Garmin mount instead of a kind of banded one. Now, do you think there's a few grams to be saved there, or do you like having the drops?
There probably is. It's just the bars are too expensive to start chopping off, really, because I use the bike, for training in the summer, really. So I want to have a normal bike setup as such. But there's probably a few grams to be saved. My tires are pretty light. They're sort of wafer thin. They're the Chrono CS Vitoria tires. And all the finishing kit on the bike is really, really light. So I've got Schmalke bars and what's the other one? Schmalke and saddle. And I've got MCFK stem and seat post. But yeah, both extremely light. Both really take the weight down off the bike, really. So they're good finishing kit.
So I'm with Paul Armstrong, who's a bit mean of me, really. He's just finished the hill climb, and here I am sticking the microphone in his face. But he's got, I noticed, quite an interesting setup. You've got kind of you've got bullhorn bars, and then you've got some TT shifters strapped to the side of your bars. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it's a SRAM X9 mountain bike shifter attached to a SRAM XO mountain bike mech, 9-speed. I got these wheels second-hand. They're the old Head Stinger 2.5s. They've got a 9-speed cassette on them. So
it looks like you've got a pretty small gear on the back there as well.
Yeah,
a pretty big gear, sorry.
11 to 25. It's a 36 on the front. It's a Superstar Components narrow wide with a 11 to 25 cassette. It seems to work on most climbs I've done so far. There's only a few that I've run out of gears on.
And can you tell us a bit about your frame? It's looking at it, so it's super stripped down. Well, I mean, it's literally just the carbon. You can see the lugs, and it's all bare carbon weave, but it's no branding. I've never seen anything like it, so can you tell us a bit about that?
It used to be a Time VXR Pro, which is the bike that the Cofidis team used to use when Wiggins was with them. I bought it a few years ago, and I think it's devalued to the point where it wasn't really worth selling. And the only thing, it was just sat in my loft. And I thought, it's a 900 gram frame with paint on it, so I stripped the paint off, see what weight I can get it down to, and I took 100 grams off it. So it's about 800 grams, and then I lacquered it, just to protect it a little bit.
Wow, so what's the rough total weight of your bike then, as it is?
It's a tad over 5.9 kilo.
That's pretty good for, you know, if you're not spending thousands and thousands on your bike, that's really pretty amazing.
Yeah, it barely cost anything, to be honest, because it's just sort of, the price of the frame's negated, really. It's because it's so old, it isn't worth anything. Probably the most expensive thing on the bike.
Power meter?
Power tap. It's they're the P1 dual-sided, so it's just over a grand for the pedals.
And it's funny, because when I'm racing a hill climb, I purely go on feel. Maybe like the first 30 seconds, I look at the power meter to check that I'm not going way over. But what about you? Do you ride on feel, or do you ride on power, or is power something you just look at after to kind of assess how you did?
I mainly use power for training, but on a hill like this that's 7-plus minutes for me, I think it works quite well. I mainly do time trialing. And you really rely on your power meter when you're time trialing. So I think the longer the hill, the more effective a power meter is. At Monsal last week, I didn't use it at all. Oh. It was on, but I didn't use it.
Oh, that's a right proper climb, that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a climb that keeps on giving.
So I'm with Nick Latimer, who's the organiser of the Mamnick Hill Climb from Rutland CC. So Nick, what's the most interesting bike setup you've seen in one of these hill climbs?
Well, I've seen somebody ride up with a tri-spoke on the front before, which I thought was a bit excessive. But it seems unusual to ride up a hill climb without doing anything unusual, like cutting off your handlebars and stuff like that these days.
And what do you think is the lightest bike you've ever seen?
I'm not sure. I've under 5 kilograms. People say like 4.5 or something like that, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. If you think your average bike is probably 8 kilos, and then 9 if you've got your bottles on and your saddlebag and stuff.
Yeah.
5 kilos, it feels like a different machine when you're riding it.
I tell you what though, everybody says that hill climb's really accessible, and it is, but people have hill climb bikes these days. It's almost as bad as time trialing. You know, you need a time trial bike to do a time trial. Now you need a hill climb bike to compete in the top of the hill climbs. It's crazy.
Yeah, you're right. It's accessible to get into, but then right at the top level when you're finding every gain, every gram you can get, and quite a lot of the time it's kind of grams per pound, I think, is how people look at it.
Yeah, although I suppose it's quite cheap to cut your handlebars off though, so you don't at least have to spend that much more, unlike a time trial bike.
I'm Rick Bailey, and I'm riding a custom steel bike made in my own workshop, Cycles in Motion. It's a bit of an unusual machine, but I've got a 36 front chainring on, 1121 on the back. I just made it as light as possible, cut down bars, the standard hill climb thing, and an interesting string spoked front wheel from Zed Wheels. So we'll see how it goes today.
I'm just having a close look at Rick Bailey's front wheel with his string spokes, and it's super interesting. I've never seen anything like it before. It's actual string. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I'm not quite sure how he's done it. Is this a custom build, Rick, or...?
Yeah, it's a custom build from Zed, who's based in Barnsley, Zed Wheels. And they're like a special polymer spoke. It takes a few days, he says, to build them up, because you have to retension them, because they do stretch a little bit. But the weight saving is pretty phenomenal. He's hoping to build the lightest set of sort of road wheels in the world using this technique. So we're just testing them out for him, really, on the team.
That's brilliant. I've honestly never seen anything like it, and when you're looking at it, you kind of think, you know, it's not possible. It's actually just a wheel with some bits of string coming out to the rim. But yeah, so roughly how much does it weigh?
I'm not sure on that one. He just chucked at me a Monsal the other day, but he's hoping to get, you know, a full set of wheels well below the 800 gram mark, hopefully approaching sort of the 700 gram mark by the end of next year, which for a set of wheels is... It's pretty mental, to be honest.
Yeah, it's super light. you're a nice dummy then. A good thing you're going uphill, and just take it easy on the downhill.
Yeah, we'll go steady on that one.
Come on, Rick!
So, Rick's just coming up the hill, as you can hear from the shouts. Just coming up to the finish. Oh, man, emptying the tank. Come on, Rick!
Come on, Rick!
Oh, man. And cross the finish line. Picked up by the marshals, collapsing and riding straight into a bush.
Did I swear?
Go for it.
Fuck.
How was that?
Fuck.
You know what? At least you look cool.
Got to win at summit, right?
Yeah.
just got run over. Torture the poor lass.
Hurry down. Hurry down.
Well done.
Oh, fuck. I think I got the record. Shit. Oh. Oh, God. Oh, such a bad idea. Oh, I think I might have got it again. My legs. It's weird, like, it hurts so much, but you can't feel it. Ah, but I can feel it now. Oh, God. Ah. Oh, my God, I'm dying.
Lucy Lee, and that was truly horrible, yeah.
Yeah, you were my minute woman.
Yeah, yeah, I sort of turned around halfway up and I could see you. I thought she's just going to get me. She's just got this. It was the only thing that motivated me to that line.
Oh, you fully emptied yourself on that line. I think you did such a good job.
Thanks, you too.
Anyway, how was it for you today? Have you done lots of hill climbs this season?
Yeah, actually, yeah, quite a lot. I'm actually off to Home Moss. Now to go do Home Moss, yeah, and Welsh Champs tomorrow.
So. Oh, well, good luck. Thanks. It's nice warm up on Man Lip before you get up to Home Moss with a nice headwind today up Home Moss.
Oh, great. Nice to know.
And are you doing the Nationals later this month?
I am doing Nationals, but I am doing Bucks here the day before, so.
Ah.
So, kind of that's my excuse ready for the Nationals.
So what's your setup here today, Lucy?
So I've got an old Scott Addict with bull horns and ETAP blips and 36 tooth on the front, 11:30 on the back, really easy gear.
Yeah, that's what I run as well, same gearing, but having the bullhorn handlebars, it's basically kind of like a TT handlebar, because then you don't have the extra weight from the drops, so it's a really good weight saving.
You can also really get a lot of power in, like you see on the track with the track sprinters, they sometimes use them instead of, not track sprinters, the pursuiters, they use them, don't they, for their butt, and really get a lot of power out onto them.
And no front ring, no front gearing, save weight everywhere you can. No bar tape. And even things that I used to do, like removing the Garmin mount and using one of the old string rubber mounts instead. Saves a few grams.
Yeah, although it doesn't mean I've got no excuses.
Well, you did pretty well today. Thanks, Lucy.
Thanks.
Somebody who rode in the World Championships a couple of weeks ago and won a stage of the Giro this year. So thanks very much for entering. And a new course record, 7:34.7, rated by Lizzie Banks.
The fastest clothing in the world tour. The home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Ratha in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Course record. That's not bad.
That's not bad at all. I was actually really surprised because the previous lady who set the course record, Rebecca Goodson, she said it on a day when there was an absolutely storming tailwind, and I thought, there's no way I'm going to beat this. You know, I'd just rocked up, hadn't done anything to my bike other than putting race wheels on, and usually, you know, I would do all the things I was talking about. I would cut my handlebars down, and tiny things like changing my Garmin mount, you know, cutting your seat post off so there's this little...
Taking that nail varnish off.
Yeah, taking the nail varnish off, taking your rings off, take your necklace off. These sound like tiny things, but you weigh these little things, you know, put them all together, and then suddenly you've got half a kilo, and that makes a really big difference.
One of the things I took from that, listening to that package as well, was the interesting setup of one of the bikes with wheels made of string.
Yeah, this is something that I didn't really notice at first when Rick was telling me about his wheel. I kind of, you know, he said string spoke, and I just kind of thought, oh, maybe it's a brand, whatever. Then I had a look at his wheel, and it just jumps out of you. It's, you know, it's white polymer string. And I thought, right, I've got to get to the bottom of this. So I actually got in touch with Lee from Zed Wheels, who makes these wheels, and went over and had a chat to him about it, because I just had to know a bit more about them, how they're made, what on earth they are.
Hi, I'm Lee from Zed Bike Wheels here in Barnsley. I build bike wheels by hand, and I suppose in particular specialist bike wheels, including things with carbon spokes and Bird Polylite string spokes. We call them string spokes, but they're not string. They're made out of a polymer, it's actually got the strongest strength to weight ratio of anything in the whole world. Commonly known as Dyneema, they are more than twice as strong as a standard butted steel spoke.
I heard that you're trying to get a pretty ridiculously light set of wheels out of them. So what's the aim and what can you build at the moment in terms of weight and what are you looking to do in the future?
Well, the current lightest set that I do as standard is 758 grams for the pair. That's on a 2024 spoke build, so for a reasonably heavy rider. We could reduce the number of spokes and bring the weight down there. But also, for anybody who's got a bit more money to spend at lighter rims, we can get the weight down to less than 700 grams. I don't think it's that many wheel builders wouldn't be able to do it. I just think that most people won't be bothered to do it.
Yeah.
And certainly in a commercial setting, people are looking at churning wheels out very, very quickly. It doesn't fit into that at all. It's hours and hours and hours. But God, it's worth it when it's done.
It's a beautiful thing to look at. One thing that really blew my mind was the way the spoke was strung onto the hub. There's kind of a loop at the top of the string. And I thought you would kind of put it through and then loop the free end of the spoke back through the hub end. And you actually said that you thought that was maybe how you did it.
Yeah, that's how I thought it would work as well. And no, definitely not. It's weird and wonderful, and I don't really know how to describe it without pictures.
Yeah, I mean, we'll put a picture online, but so you put this loop end through the hub, through the hole in the hub, and then you basically put what is essentially a stick, but it's actually a piece of string. Let's call it a stick for all intents and purposes.
Good idea.
You put a stick through and then pull it tight, and then that's what holds it in place. And you know, once it's under tension, there's nothing that's going to move that. It's not gonna, you know, slip out. But looking at it as I am, it's just a bit nuts.
But yeah, once it's built up, they're so strong, it's ridiculous. Far stronger than a steel wheel.
I mean, I'm still struggling to picture a string wheel. But you took loads of pictures.
Yeah, Lee kindly sent me a full report of how you build up these string wheels. So if you're struggling to visualise quite what goes on, because it's super complicated, and like he was saying, it is more like crochet than traditional wheel building. So we'll post these online to help you see. But it was so interesting. I mean, I think I spent 3 hours there with Lee that day going through everything that he does, and it's just an incredible place. It's like a magical wheel building shop, workshop. I'm not sure what you'd call it, but it's an incredible place. So interesting.
And am I right in thinking his ambition is to make the lightest set of road wheels available?
Yeah, so he was talking about getting it down to 600-700 grams. And obviously, the lighter it is, it costs more. You know, you've got the lightweight rims, you've got the lightweight hubs. But with these spokes, it just cuts out so much weight that if you've got the money to spend, it is possible to get an insanely light set of wheels. And they're not just wheels that are going to go uphill, like you were saying. You can use them in Audaxes. You can use them in mountain biking, even. We were talking about Callum there, who's actually Callum Ramsey Brown. He's quite a famous local hill climber. He puts out 2,000 watts on a starting effort and averages over 1,000 watts for these really short hill climbs. And he's using these wheels. And if that's not a testament to show the strength of them and how reliable they are, then I don't know what is.
Well, going from expensive wheel sets to doing it on the cheap, you went to speak to Rebecca Richardson, who was inspired to take up hill climbing only a few years ago, right?
Yeah, so we hear from her now. She's had an incredible season where she's won 18 out of 18 hill climbs in the run-up to nationals and then taken the bronze medal in the Hill Climb National Championships. And she really shows us how you can do hill climbing on a budget. It's not an elite person sport. You need the bike, but then all of these small touches you can do to make the bike a few kilos lighter is really just getting your hacksaw out and taking your bike to bits.
I got into racing about 4 years ago, and really I had no idea about racing until that point. And I picked up a cycling weekly at the local shop, never even heard of cycling weekly. Opened up the front, or the central spread, and found out about this thing called hill climbs, and it just totally inspired me at that point in time. There was a the current champion at the time, Marika Semenka, they had a feature on her, and I was just in awe of this person and of this sort of discipline of cycling. Because, you know, I was your classic kind of Strava hunter, and I had never raced before, and it was all just, you know, a total kind of unknown for me, and it just grabbed my attention. And from that point onwards, in my head, I dreamt of being a national hill climb champion one day. So my bike is actually an off-the-shelf road bike. It's an Eswitz Tarmac, which I bought, again, with hill climbing in mind. It's also a hill climb bike that is relatively aero, so covers the road racing season. So it's quite light anyway. The main things about the bike, which I've changed, are kind of all those like little weight-saving things that you can do pretty cheaply. So I've cut off the handlebar, the drops on the handlebars. I have taken off all the bar tape. I've had lightweight cabling. The skewers, which attach my wheels to the bike, we've changed them to titanium skewers. That saved a lot of weight, actually. The saddle, it's a carbon saddle, like no frills, which makes training quite uncomfortable at times. But again, that saved like 100 grams. I think in total, for on a real small budget, I saved about two kilograms, you know, and that was just like the easy wins. So on the gearing, I actually have running now a one chainring on the front. On the cassette at the back, I've got a 2811. And actually, I thought a lot about this, but I actually went for a 38 teeth front chainring, and really I was trying to encompass as many hill climbs as I could. You know, I didn't want to have to be faffing around with changing the kind of chainring and the setup, but ultimately I chose that 38 with the nationals in mind. So really, throughout the hill climb season, my main goal has been the nationals, and we've basically adapted the bike ready for nationals. So the wheels, for example, could be an area I could save a lot of weight on. However, for nationals, I would anticipate them needing to be a bit more aero because it's a longer climb. So what we have focused on more is the tyres. So we've gone for Vittoria Corsa, which are the fastest tyres, and they save some watts and save a bit of weight. So there will be some extra little trimmings we do before the nationals. But the idea is always weight. You know, if you can kind of have that balance between weight and aerodynamics, or the kind of demands of the hill, then you're going to be winning at that point with the bike. It isn't just about weight, you know, there is an aerodynamics factor.
All right then, from the British National Hill Climb Championship to the World Hill Climb Championship, let's hear from Phil Guymon now. He's known these days for his Worst Retirement Ever series on YouTube. And I asked him first if he was still very bad at retiring.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm probably getting worse, if anything. yeah, no, it's good. It's been fun to kind of explore things that are competitive and fun and cycling related that aren't race specific or pro racing specific. And I'm just kind of, it's just an adventure in kind of that world, or making my own world, or whatever it turns into.
I'm Phil Guymon. When I was a pro cyclist, I would travel to some of the most beautiful places on earth and then race right past it and have dinner at the hotel. Now that I'm retired, I'm going back to do it right. But I still love to suffer, so I'm training hard and staying fit. This is Worst Retirement Ever.
Phil has just hosted the World Hill Climb Champs, and he told me about some of the riders who competed in this year's event.
This year, we had Gavin Mannion from Rally, was kind of the bigger pro name. And then another guy sort of showed up who I didn't expect. I didn't know him. I didn't know who was signing up. His name was Aria Chiani. And he was actually, I think he was training for it, and he lives in Northern California. And he ended up being my main rival. And the Gibraltar is a half hour climb, and it came down to a sprint with the two of us at the very end. So it was, it ended up being a pretty good race, and the video will be fun too.
So it's a little bit different then to a British hill climb, is it? Is it a mass start you all ride together?
Yeah. So we start in waves based on age group and categories. And then it's a mass start. It's our climbs here are longer than what you have. So it's pretty safe to have a mass start. And I kind of just like that concept.
So, I mean, we're talking about the sort of technology that goes into hill climbing bikes. I guess in a mass start race, you'll on a longer climb, you'll probably use a very different bike to the one we'd use for a time trial up a, you know, a 1K super steep climb then, I guess.
I would assume so. I've never done a proper UK hill climb, so that's something I need to work on and try to figure out next year. Yeah, I think most people kind of just used pretty traditional road bikes. We also have to get down at the end. And Gibraltar is a climb that you need a real bike to descend with drop bars, for example. I learned that the first year. I was like, yeah, I miss my drops. you don't get to do the podium if you die on the way home. So that's something. Yeah, it's more traditional race bikes, but people definitely geek out on having the lightest equipment available, and there's plenty of silly light stuff there.
Well, I'm interested. Obviously, you're no longer, you know, riding for a pro team. I guess you have a lot more freedom when it comes to finding the sort of kit you want to use. Do you enjoy that freedom? Do you enjoy tinkering and finding the lightest
absolutely.
Possible stuff?
It's a fun thing when you're racing. Like, you don't care what your equipment is. You don't think about it. It's not your job. It's somebody else's job to maintain it. And now, like, I have to, you know, I still have sponsors, but I still have to order my own parts. You know, I have to know what I'm getting and what fits, and generally I learn how to work on it. If I want something, I can just buy it with no consideration of some sponsor conflicts or whatever the team would kind of allow. That it was definitely, I wouldn't even really know when I was racing professionally, I wouldn't really know what bike I was going to be on until the day I picked it up. You know, it's not like if I wanted to improve my bike, I didn't even have access to it.
I'm interested, obviously, you know, you do these sort of mass start hill climb events and these big events, and you seem to spend most of your time riding uphill. What do you look for in a bike, and do you see a lot of innovations that other riders are using that impress you?
Yeah, I mean, these days where I live, LA, like, they, because it never gets cold here, there's no snow, so they pave the roads real steep. There's also famously traffic. I don't know if you've heard, we have traffic in LA. So I'm a big fan of disc brakes. If I'm training just for normal rides, like out my door, I can do 3,000 meters in 4 hours, no problem. Just like kind of in the middle of Hollywood. That's sort of my kind of training territory. So yeah, disc brakes are important here. I think that, you know, the cars come out from nowhere and it's just, you can get your speed up pretty fast on the downhills. More these days, like, I kind of just look for what's a good all around bike that still works in every way, and especially in the braking, and is also like light enough to rip uphill. I did get for my hill climb specifically, so, which is, you know, basically like I only do those on YouTube or like for, you know, for important training days for myself or for my hill climb event. I got Factor sent me the VAM. If I go full dork in the UK style, it'll be on that bike where I'm taking a saw and a drill to it. So that might happen. But in the meantime, that's a super fun bike to ride around in the canyons as well. But I definitely opt for the disc brake bike most days.
So what's the lightest you've ever got your bike down to?
I think when I went with the saw and everything a couple of years ago, it was 12 pounds. You can do the math on that. It's light. It's not as crazy. I've definitely seen lighter with what you guys do. But I also feel like once you get in the silly light wheels, I'm sure somebody will argue with me, but I like things to be stiff. I'm probably kind of heavy for a climber. I'm like 70 kilos almost. So I think stiffness goes a long way for me. And that's a trade-off that every time I kind of make it, I'd rather go back to like having a deeper wheel, having the, you know, handlebars that don't flex, all that kind of stuff. I think that matters, and it's fun to have a silly light bike, but it's also a lot more rideable if you're willing to take an extra kilo.
You are in that sort of world where people are pushing weight limits. Just stuff like UCI rules around weight. Do they hold the sport back, do you think?
I mean, I think the UCI holds the sport back in a million ways worse than that. But sure, yeah, that's part of it. I don't think the weight. Forgive me, fire trucks. No, that was a cop. Yep.
That's not good.
I don't think weight. Yeah, I mean, the weight limit is reasonable. I don't think, you know, a bike with all the correct parts on it built safely and mostly like stock stuff is kind of around the weight limit, at least for a rider of my size. I don't think that the market demands an extra kilo lighter bike so much, you know what I mean, that it matters. And also like people are free to buy and do whatever they want in the market. I think the bike industry is finally, maybe this is technology or they just figured it out. They're finally building bikes for consumers more than pros, which is a relief to see. Like the whole like disc brake debate thing. My thing with that, like in the world tour, you're ripping down hills and you have closed roads and these guys are really good at what they're doing. And they're arguably the only people in the world who don't need disc brakes is the world tour peloton. Whereas everyone else should have disc brakes. It's just like, it's safer. And it's reasonable. So that's kind of, and I think they're making those distinctions now and bike brands are building bikes for average Joes. Not the other way around.
Last question then. So I'm thinking about like ultimate hill climbing bikes. If you were sort of blue skying, assembling some kind of crazy hill climbing bike, what are the brands, what are the products out there that you'd be taking a look at?
I mean, the Factor VAM is a real nice place to start, just in the ridiculously light, stiff frame category. Like I said, I don't want my wheels to flex. Like I've been with Matic for a long time and it's reliable and it's like they've been making wheels since bike wheels existed and I trust them and every time I see, you know, people build things for the specs, you know, you can look, you know, you can advertise a house as 4 bedrooms and 3 bathrooms, but it's all crammed into, you know, 10 feet by 10 feet. And it's going to be miserable. And if you sit there and say, oh, my wheels are 600 grams and they're tied together with string, it might look good on paper and on the specs on the internet, but I know I don't want to ride that thing. So that's good. Mavic also has these new like super light shoes that are like not the carbon shell ones that they came out with a year ago. They're Kevlar. Those are sweet. All the like aero speed suits, our hills aren't as steep as yours probably. Like aerodynamics are for sure a factor, in what we do. Like I ride an aero helmet and like a full speed suit deal. I'm all about stuff that's like not too stock. I don't want a drill to be involved in my bike process. That's I'm not there yet. But you know, I'm young. Maybe that changes. Maybe I get older and I stop getting, there's a point where you can't get stronger anymore and you have to start getting lighter. Getting to that, I think that's like upper 30s. I think I can still keep the watts where they are.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
So that's Phil Guymon there. If you want to see more of Phil's stuff, just search for Worst Retirement Ever. Now, he is the organiser of Phil's Cookie Gran Fondo and the World Hill Climb Championships. And we're going to look at another event now, but this time a little bit more closer to home.
My name's Mark Etchers. I'm the organiser of Monto Hill Climb. Moved on then as well to Sheffield Grand Prix. And then in the last few years, Sheffield's Magnificent Seven. It's pretty unique, really, and as an offering to the hill climbers, it's like an on-road version of a mountain bike enduro. Kind of looked at the Pittsburgh Dirty Dozen, which is basically they race up stupidly steep, mega steep streets, cobble streets over in Pittsburgh. I said, right, do you know what? I think this could work, and so we all start at HQ together with lead cars. Lead motorbike, so you get that real feeling of a peloton, but then it's split into 7 hill climbs, so they're not timed, it's just based on position. So the first, well, basically the first overline scores the most amount of points. The whole point of this Magnificent Seven is because there's 7 hills of Sheffield, and we've even had a guy on a trike come and do it. So Gary the trike man's been Yeah, it was a test for him, but he got round and he enjoyed it, and you know, it was great. So for those novices, it feels like they're in what would be like the Tour of Yorkshire, Tour de France, because they really feel like the pros. You know, they got the residents shouting them on with cowbells, and you know, the riders are beaming. They absolutely love it because they feel like the pros, you know. So I kind of think the legacy of the event is now it's attracting, you know, really good riders. You know, like even now, the current national hill climb champion, Ed Laverax, expressed an interest of coming up to Sheffield from Wales this year and coming having a go. So that'd be honoured, you know, for him to come. And I mean, I guess something like Education First, who have been doing the gravel rides and, you know, on the Three Peaks cyclocross, that, you know, who's to say someone might get wind of it and come and have a go, and they'd be more than welcome to come. But yeah, if anybody wants to have a go, it's open to, you know, professionals, amateurs, you know, anyone who wants to come and have a go. So, and we'd welcome anyone.
So Lizzie, I think that speaks to the reason why you love hill climbing and this so much, because of the community element of the events.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. My husband actually did it a couple of years ago, and it went right past our house, and it brought out people who would never usually go and watch cycling. Our neighbours were there with cowbells, kids were lining the street, and like we're saying, the community atmosphere was just incredible. It pulls in people from all over to race, to watch. Like Mark was saying, people feel like pros. They're in this event, this supported event. You've got closed roads, racing up closed roads, people cheering you on, and it's just so cool. There's nothing like it in the UK. And yeah, this really epitomises why I love the sport of hill climbing.
Well, he spoke about the Dirty Dozen as well, Mark did, the event in Pittsburgh, is it, I think? And that has been on my bucket list. So maybe, it's quite difficult to reach there, so maybe I'll have to go to Sheffield instead. Lizzie, thanks very much. You're currently in your off-season still. What's next for you?
Oh, getting back on it. I need to try and ride for 3 hours without stopping to eat two pieces of cake. And then, yeah, some more interesting research for Cycling Podcast as well, I think.
It's been great, actually. You know, we've been sat here in the cafe chatting about the next couple of episodes. We're pretty inspired, I think. I'm really looking forward to bringing you the next one. The next one will be in December and then back again in January. Anyway, Lizzie and I are both off to ride in our separate directions back home through the Peak District. I've got to do at least one horrible hill. You got any, Lizzie?
Yeah, I've got 2 hours of horrible hills ahead, so pray for me.
Pray for Lizzie.